PublicIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be going over a few public company announcements, the potential for cannabis rescheduling in the U.S., as well as at the end, a little bit of a frank discussion about cannabis studies and drug studies in general. So first today, starting with Psych Corporation, trading on the OTC as PSYC, the parent company to Spotlight Media Corporation, who announced that through its wholly owned subsidiary, Spotlight Media Corporation, the acquisition of Stock Day Media Platform at La Jolla Media LLC. So the deal, which is effective on September 1st, is valued at $500,000 and will be satisfied by the company through a combination of cash and stock distributions over the course of the next 12 months. So if you're unfamiliar with Psych Corporation, they're basically one of the leaders right now within the psychedelic and cannabis media space. I wouldn't say that that's too much of a brag at the moment, because there's a very limited amount of cannabis and psychedelic focused media, at least when you're looking at the investment space. And even the stuff that is out there, unfortunately, because of all the restrictions on mainstream platforms, for instance, like YouTube, which I'm on right now, really there's not a way for a lot of these companies or a lot of this media to get huge traction. Same thing when you're looking at Spotify and iTunes. Basically, most platforms that have different podcasts or different media options, even advertising of any form, it's always going to be pretty limited when you're looking at the psychedelic and cannabis landscape. That being said, Psych has done a pretty good job. They've built themselves kind of their own little empire. It is expanding. And with this acquisition, this will allow them to kind of move a little bit forward. So Stock Day Media is mainly focused on nanocap and microcap companies. And the benefit for Psych Corporation in this is that a lot of the companies within the psychedelic space and the cannabis space traded on the OTC, they're going to be smaller cap companies, especially when you're looking at the mushroom space right now, just because regulations still haven't really changed dramatically enough for any of these companies to really get any main traction. You're still mainly in the research phase. There's a few companies that are international that are producing products. Mostly they're still focusing on functional mushrooms, though, not psychedelic mushrooms. Again, there's a lot of research, there's a lot of preparation that's in play, but right now we haven't really seen anything manifest as in a company that's actually selling a psychedelic product legally through any markets. Again, there's small operations, there's psychedelic clinics. I've talked about this a bunch in the past. If you listen to some of our old podcasts, I love talking about ketamine clinics, mainly the ones that are hooking up with VR now, which are crazy. Those things are basically creating the Matrix. In our real life, it's pretty much the most bizarre stuff that I can think of. But again, psychedelics in general, still mainly in the research phase. There's obviously still a lot of attention in this space. But I think for long term, a lot of people are looking at it as, where is this sort of market really going to turn into, and where are you going to really see the potential? Obviously, there's a lot of benefits with psychedelics. There's a lot of different research that's coming out showing the potential for psychedelics when it comes to therapy. When it comes to curing PTSD, there's been a lot of great results with a lot of different psychedelic components, LSD, psilocybin, MDMA, and ketamine as well. But in general, still really hasn't turned into anything that's overly financially great. So most of these companies are going to be small. That's why Psych has focused on Stock Day Media. So for them, there's a lot of benefits for them. I do think that this fits into their model. So Stock Day Media website, it already contains over 500 hours of resourceful digital content, has over 1,500 podcast episodes, and published on different websites. One of them is Audio Boom. Again, there's so many different podcast outlets these days, as with this podcast. So I will say that it's a little bit diluted when you're looking at cannabis and psychedelic focused podcasts. Unfortunately, they're on a lot of different things. And Psych Media is, again, trying to kind of create their own ecosystem here. It's been difficult to see it actually manifest into anything. As someone who likes to follow the cannabis and psychedelic space, I don't come across a ton of Psych's articles or podcasts or different outlets. To me, probably the biggest thing within the cannabis space, who is a resource I use constantly, is Marijuana Moment. They seem to be doing a really good job. Obviously, MJ Biz Daily as well. I would say MJ Biz Daily more so, just because they're also running the conferences. And I would say that's kind of where their traction is, because so many businesses have to interact with them for the conferences. Obviously, they get access to a lot of the public company information, and they kind of are the jumping off point for a lot of the big announcements, because most of the people wait for their conferences to make big announcements or to even make some of these deals in person. So those two resources have done really well. Psych again has put out some great content, but it still is somewhat in its infancy. So commenting on this, over the past plus 3 years, I've had the privilege of working with Everett Jolie and the amazing Stock Day Media team, and have witnessed firsthand the incredible value their platform can deliver to companies in the public arena. I believe that integrating their platform beneath the evolving Psych umbrella of multimedia assets represents a huge opportunity for the company's current and future value proposition. As highlighted in their press release earlier the week, where Psych entered into a strategic partnership with Target Media to help accelerate audience and revenue growth, the company has increased its year-over-year revenue earnings by nearly 94%, and this has primarily been the result of our acquisition of Technical 420 and On the Bids last September, which are platforms geared towards servicing companies in the public markets. And again, you can read the rest in the article, which is available at investorideas.com. And I highly recommend, if you're listening to these podcasts, definitely check the articles, as they actually include all the backlinks to follow up on a lot of the information that I'm providing, and it provides more detailed information. With the podcast, I'm mainly just skimming through this, because otherwise it's just going to be me reading a whole lot of either commentary or technical jargon throughout the rest of it, and eventually it just ends up taking too much time, and it's boring to watch someone read, so I try not to do too much of it. But I have to do some, because for some of it I have to be technically correct, because they are press releases for public companies. So in general, Psych continuing to expand. They're focusing a lot more on what's going to make sort of short-term profitability for them, and they are looking at different areas that are obviously going to support their ecosystem. It's definitely a company worth paying attention to. I'd love to see it manifest into something a little bit more tangible and real, and start actually coming across Psych articles more frequently and coming across their podcast more frequently. Again, it's kind of difficult within this market, as it is with this podcast and doing anything within the cannabis or psychedelic space, other than kind of talking about it in a more non-business sense. So obviously there's people like Joe Rogan, Aubrey Marcus, and tons of different YouTube eccentrics who talk about cannabis and psychedelics in more of a personal use setting, their own experiences, you know, different theories about these drugs and substances. There was a great session on the DMT studies going on in the UK right now, that was hosted by Graham Hancock a while ago. That was fantastic. But in general, you don't see a lot of things about the public companies. You don't see the sort of business side, and that's because there's a lot more restrictions about what can be said in a business setting. And also, these companies have to be very careful about how they sort of promote or advertise or even discuss their products because of all the restrictions that are in place. Moving on now to Decibel Cannabis Company Incorporated, trading on the TSX Venture as DB and the OTCQB as DBCCF, who announced that it's expanded its global footprint by entering into a supply agreement to provide premium dried medical cannabis flower to 4C Labs, which is a healthcare technology and pharmaceutical company focused on virtual prescriptions, pharmaceutical distribution, and clinical development in cannabis-based medicinal products for human health in the UK and the Channel Islands. So Decibel will supply 4C Labs with Quest-branded craft-quality medical cannabis. I've talked about Decibel Cannabis in the past. Quest is their brand. They've done pretty well with this brand. It's a 3-year supply agreement, and the initial shipment is expected before the year's end. And there's a minimum purchase commitment, which will be over certain genetics of the Quest brand in the UK. We're excited to partner with 4C Labs, a leading organization in the growing medical cannabis industry in the UK that echoes Decibel's commitment to quality and patient care. Not only will this unlock a strong partnership with a new market for Decibel's craft cannabis products, but it also sets the stage for further growth into the European markets, said Adam Coates, the chief revenue officer. Decibel's success with Quest flower products in Canada and in Israel's markets reinforces the demand for premium cannabis products and the reputation we have built to service that demand. I've talked about this a bunch in previous podcasts. I apologize, we haven't done tons of video podcasts, but in all the audio podcasts, I've talked about this a ton, which is every single cannabis company talks about their commitment to quality. which becomes somewhat of an impossibility. Everyone can't be producing the best quality product, or it's just all the same product. And most of the product that is going out there actually does have to be very high quality because of all the restrictions in place around the industry. It's very heavily regulated, and anyone who's paying attention to this knows that. So I will say that actually most of the product going out there is actually pretty high quality. But that being said, everybody's producing high quality. And again, compared to maybe legacy growers who are still operating in the illicit market, there's debate over how good that quality is, over the potency of their product. And a lot of those things just come down to regulatory infrastructure that kind of limits how these companies can operate, how they can package their products, the THC profiles, the cannabinoid profiles, the growing conditions, etc. Unfortunately, because of all the regulations that exist, whether you're looking at Canada or the US or internationally, some of these things are great for safety. Obviously, we want to keep heavy metals and pesticides and things that are going to be causing problems to patients out of the cannabis. That being said, though, there's a lot of regulations that don't quite make sense, and unfortunately, it is a big hurdle that the industry is continuing to sort of fall over just because, there's not a lot of ways for them to really compete in the way that they should be able to. If we were comparing this to other products on the market or even other pharmaceuticals, there should be a little bit more leeway for some of these companies to be able to do different methods, but unfortunately, this is what we got. That being said, for Decibel, this is a good move. They're going to be entering into the UK. They're already in Israel, and obviously in the Canadian market. It is good to see companies still focusing on the medical market in the UK. The sort of online distribution for medical products seems to be what's gotten the most success, just because the actual sort of in-person clinics that have been available have been pretty limited. They haven't been in the best areas. They haven't had the sort of best onboarding system for patients, whereas a lot of the online systems seem to have been the best. Obviously, there's people who are going to be skeptical about that, and we've seen that even in Canada and the US. When you start the medical program, there's sort of suspect areas where you're kind of allowing wiggle room for how patients can onboard into this program and get access to medical cannabis. That being said, though, I do think that there's enough UK patients that obviously want it, and there's enough need there that it should be an easy enough process. So it is smart to them to focus on that type of business model and that type of medical offering within the UK until laws change in the UK or Europe, which obviously there's different pilot programs I've talked about in the past. There's a lot of speculation around the German market right now. We haven't seen anything materialize, even though it's expected that that will be discussed within the next week or so. There's a pilot program going on in France. There's pilot programs going on in different parts of the EU. And there has been medical cannabis somewhat in the UK for a while, but it's been very limited. And I think for a lot of these Canadian companies, they're always looking and really hyped about the idea of expanding into the EU marketplace, but so far it hasn't materialized into anything too astronomical. There's obviously been some success stories for a lot of these early adopters in the Canadian or within the Canadian market who moved into the EU space. They did quite well, but the problem is over time there's been growers who are obviously popping up in Europe. The distribution system and the infrastructure is a difficulty. The regulatory framework is a difficulty, and the price control is the biggest issue. And that's also the biggest issue in Canada. And in general, this is why even when you're looking at the US and markets like California, the taxation and the sort of pricing limitations that have been placed on the legal side of the industry versus the illicit industry, which is able to operate alongside them. Even though they get shut down, they can just kind of pop up again over and over again. Unfortunately, a lot of these issues have really slowed down the growth of the cannabis industry. There's a lot of different speculation as to why that is, who benefits, what lobbying groups are put in place, what's going on there, blah, blah, blah. But in general, it just seems to be that when it comes to the actual regulatory bodies and the lawmakers and people within politics, their experience and understanding of cannabis and psychedelics is extremely limited or non-existent. And so most of the time, the regulations and the laws that they pass down sort of reflect that. So definitely a good move for Decibel. And there's other announcements from the last couple of weeks that sort of support continued growth in the UK. But I think the biggest thing to pay attention to, which I talked about in a previous podcast, is going to be what goes on in Germany over the next couple of weeks. If things go well, that could sort of open up the doors in other EU marketplaces. Obviously, the UK is not part of that anymore, but they're still going to be influenced by Germany's decision because they're within the same area. And I do think that that's hopefully something that could happen in the next year, is a real open or a more open market in Germany with the addition of recreational sales. And then we could start seeing cannabis really take off in the EU and in the UK. But for right now, it's baby steps. Next, looking at Innocan Pharma Corporation, who announced the results of a clinical study regarding the pain-relieving effects and safety of the company's subcutaneous liposomal CBD for dogs with osteoarthritis. This was published in the Frontiers in Veterinary Science Journal under the research topic Use of Cannabis Derivatives in Veterinary Medicine. In the study, six dogs with naturally occurring osteoarthritis, unresponsive to conventional medications, were treated with a single injection of 5 milligrams of liposomal CBD. So some of the key findings were prolonged CBD detection in the plasma with peak concentration of 45.2 nanograms per milliliter. There was a significant decrease in the pain and increase of well-being for several weeks, significant increase in activity objectively measured by 5th and 6th weeks, and minor swelling at the injection site in 5 out of 6 dogs, which resolved within a few days without any treatment. So you can read the full study in the Frontiers of Veterinary Science. Again, there's a link attached in the articles. Check it out, Investor Ideas. There's always articles with all these podcasts, and that's where most of the information is going to be. Again, my video or audio presentation of this is always just going to be kind of a quick summation, maybe not so quick, but semi-quick summation of the article. So I highly recommend going to Investor Ideas, actually reading the article, clicking the links and reading the follow-up articles, because with a lot of this, there's a lot of really good in-depth information. And if you actually really want to understand why you should invest in these companies or why the sections of the industry are worth looking into, you want to do your research. We've talked with tons of industry experts in the past. They always say, do your research, do your research, do your research. So please actually go to the articles and do the research. But it's an interesting development. There's been a lot of different companies in the past that have shown really great benefits for pain relief within different issues for dogs with CBD pills. I think in general, why it always is going to have to be CBD and why you have to focus on not giving these dogs a high is they don't have the perspective or understanding of what's happening to them if they get high. That's kind of where the sickness comes from. It's nausea. Their balance gets distorted. And obviously, they're a dog. They don't really know what the hell's going on. So CBD products seem to be the only way to go. There's been lots of different edible products. There's been a lot of great anecdotal stories, as well as, you know, very tangible proof from clinical studies. But it's always good to see another study like this come out that supports that this could be used as an option. Nobody wants to see their dog suffer when they have, you know, diseases and ailments near the end of their life. Everyone wants to at least be able to watch them relax. And no one wants to just dope the hell out of them and give them like such heavy painkillers that the dog's just kind of sitting in a pile on the floor, pissing all over itself, etc. It's nicer when they can still be a functional dog until, you know, they might need to be put down or they might need further treatment or surgery or to come out of surgery. So I do think CBD for pets is a great thing, especially when you're looking at livestock. So for things like with horses, there's been a lot of really, really cool things when it comes to some of the more intricate surgeries that go on for different horses, and how CBD for pain treatment for them can actually help decrease sort of the lameness going on in horses. Again, I highly recommend doing more research on this if you're interested in what's going on with CBD in pets. There's a lot of different companies, but for Innocan Pharma, it's great to see this study come out. I will say it's not a huge study. There's definitely been bigger studies with pets that have been conducted, but more studies continue to provide that narrative some credibility. Next, looking at MediPharm Labs Corporation, trading on the TSX as Labs and the OTCQB as MEDIF, who announced that Harvest Medicine study entitled Self-Reported Effects of Illness, Severity, Depression, and Anxiety in Fibromyalgia Patients, a Large Retrospective Case Series, has been published in the peer-reviewed American Journal of Endocannabinoid Medicine. The retrospective study was led by HMED and reviewed data of 805 patients who indicated fibromyalgia as a primary reason for seeking medical cannabis and had a minimum of one follow-up assessment. The majority of patients, so 76.1%, reported using CBD oil, which aligns with the current practice guidelines for authorizing medical cannabis as an adjuvant therapy and managing chronic pain. 75% of patients saw a decrease in their self-reported illness severity, which may include chronic pain, insomnia, and fatigue. Anxiety scores were improved in 22% of those patients reporting mild, moderate severity, and in 48% of patients reporting severe anxiety. And 27% of patients reporting mild to medium depression noticed a reduction in symptoms. So, the validated study data shows that the medical cannabis may play an effective role in the management of fibromyalgia and associated symptoms of depression and anxiety, and that additional similar studies are recommended. There's been a lot of different studies. There's been a lot of different data sets that have come out about anxiety and pain reduction with cannabis. There's been some that are positive. There's been some that have been on the more negative side when it comes to how this could affect them in the long term. But in general, I think it's becoming more and more of, I don't want to say a well-known fact, but it seems that it's mostly accurate, that when it comes to CBD specifically, when it helps, it can help a lot with anxiety and depression. When it comes to pain management, CBD can reduce the inflammation overall. That is pretty much a guaranteed fact now, that CBD does help with inflammation. Inflammation tends to always be involved in usual pain. So it's becoming more and more of, you know, this is a very likely scenario that using CBD for anxiety, for depression, for inflammation, and for pain treatment is effective. But when compared to some of the drugs that are on the market, it's not as fast acting. That's kind of the big complaint when it comes to CBD is dosage control, also the quality of the CBD products. And this is where the studies and a lot of the data that's out there gets very confusing and muddied. Is because there's a huge variety of potential CBD products that are available. And with all those different CBD products, there's a huge difference of the quality. And also, different studies are using different doses. They're also using different administration methods. So some are using it in edibles. Some are using it in oils. Some are using it through smoke or vape. And also, some are using CBD isolate. Some are using full spectrum. Some are using partial spectrum. If you go back and listen to any of the previous podcasts, I talk about this all the time, of that most of the time it has been agreed upon within cannabinoid science today that CBD and THC and really every cannabinoid work better in tandem with the other cannabinoids and terpenes all in effect. The entourage effect is something that's discussed quite often within the industry. So that's something you should always take into consideration with any of these studies and with any of the topics discussing CBD or cannabis in general, is what is the actual product that they're putting out there? Not all cannabis is equal. And again, if it was, there'd be no point to all these variety of companies. If you could just grow, it's just one plant all the time, it wouldn't really matter. And the studies would just be very concise and simple. But unfortunately, different strains produce different results, different growing methods produce different chemical results. And then there's also different methods of extraction, there's different qualities of the product. Again, there's been lots of CBD products that have been sold that are CBD isolate, that come from China, that have heavy metals in them, that have pesticides in them, that are super low grade CBD, that have been degraded over time. There's how actual most cannabinoids degrade in different conditions, whether that's storage or light interaction, just a lot of different factors. So it is interesting to see more of these studies come out. Obviously, 805 patients is a decent amount. There has been larger studies, but that's still a good study to see. And again, good for Medifarm to see that this is going in the right direction, although I would say self-reported. Obviously, there's going to be some skepticism from doctors and different people in the medical industry, and even myself. When you're looking at this, it's, you know, published in the American Journal of Endocannabinoids. I'll be talking about that at the end. Anyways, in other recent news, this was reported by Marijuana Moment. Again, great resource if you want to catch up to basically everything going on, especially in the U.S. on a state-by-state level. They do some of the best research out there, them and MJ Biz Daily. I would say Marijuana Moment tends to be a little faster sometimes, MJ Biz Daily. Again, if you want to get information more based off of public companies and what's going on sort of the business side. I think they're a better resource. Marijuana Moment tends to be a better resource as far as state legislation and like individual news stories within each state and within each county. And they cover it very rapidly and do a very in-depth job. Lots of interviews. They have a great team. So good resource to check out is Marijuana Moment. But anyways, they reported on this. Lots of different people reported on this. There's been a lot of talk about this. If you've been paying attention to the cannabis space, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the HHS, officially recommended that cannabis be moved from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 under federal law. This is a big one for the cannabis industry. Obviously, I think everyone was rooting for descheduling. But Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, it still does impact things. It obviously impacts things for U.S. businesses when it comes to taxation. This could be a very beneficial thing for the industry as a whole, and it's the baby step approach. Unfortunately, if you've been paying attention to things like the Safe Banking Act, and a lot of other things that have been put forward by Schumer, a lot of it's been kind of that Charlie Brown football moment where everybody gets excited, runs up to that ball, and then it's pulled out at the last moment. And the Safe Banking has been probably the most heartbreaking one, where this is something that seems gets a lot of bipartisan support, seems very obvious for the industry. Seems in general people don't understand why this wouldn't get passed through, but every time it does not get passed through. And every time there's a bunch of hype, there's a bunch of articles that come out, some stocks move up and down, and then afterwards nothing happens, and everybody gets depressed for the next 4 to 6 months until it all happens again. So hopefully this isn't the case. It is a different group that's actually talking about this time. So obviously this was something that Biden had appointed them to look into, to do this study to see on what are the actual benefits. It's not great that they went from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Obviously, it's better than Schedule 1, which says this has no medical benefits and it's highly abusive. Schedule 3, different distinctions, so there would be some benefits. Obviously, it's not heroin, which is good. It's good to see that at least we're moving away from cannabis being treated as heroin, because it's definitely not the same as that substance, but it often is and still is treated as that, as it's a Schedule 1 drug. So, the recommendation is still not binding, and the DEA has the final say, but the scientific analysis combined with the growing political support for cannabis reform may influence the DEA to make a change. Following the data and science, HHS has expeditiously responded to President Biden's directive to HHS Secretary Becerra and provided its scheduling recommendation for the marijuana to the DEA on August 29th. An HHS spokesman said in a statement to Marijuana Moment on Wednesday, "This administration process was completed in less than 11 months, reflecting this department's collaboration and leadership to ensure that a comprehensive scientific evaluation be completed and shared expeditiously." Again, I'm sure there's going to be some critics that say 11 months wasn't quite, expeditiously, but either way, this is still potentially a good thing, and the usual things have happened with potential good news and potentially things changing within the U.S. landscape, even though if you've been paying attention to the Biden administration, they tend to always talk about cannabis when they're kind of facing some scrutiny for other things. So you can get all conspiratorial and weird, as most donors do. We love to get conspiratorial because we're all paranoid from being high. But anyways, in general, you tend to see that there's a lot of posturing, or at least there has been a lot of posturing from the Biden administration. It doesn't seem like under the Biden presidency there will be any real big moves in the cannabis industry. If you look at Biden's track record in the past, he is not an advocate of cannabis, and definitely has been a real hard person on cannabis laws in different positions that he's shared in the past. So I wouldn't expect him at this point in his life. He's not exactly looking like he's changing a lot of his opinions on the world at this moment in time. I don't see it happening during his administration, but it does at least allow for some rallying support for the industry. So companies like Canopy Growth Corporation, trading on the NASDAQ as CGC, Tilray Brands Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ as TLRY, and Aurora Cannabis Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ as ACB, all saw growth this week with their stocks. So Canopy Growth rose by more than 28%, Tilray rose by about 11%, and Aurora rose by about 5%. This was on Wednesday and Thursday. They're still up as of today, but in general, I think over the next couple of weeks, you'll probably see that level out again, just because the hype will probably die down, and I think more skepticism will start coming back in as too many people realize that we've been offered many promises in the past, and most of the time, they don't materialize in anything. Again, I think a lot of people would like this to be the reality, but it's probably not going to happen. And one of the reasons why you should always be skeptical of what's going on when it comes to cannabis reform is because of the studies. So I had already kind of briefly touched on this, but I've included a bunch of links in the article. So again, I highly recommend checking out the articles that are attached with this. There's a link. You can check it out, investorideas.com or podcast.ca. Both those websites, you can find the articles attached to these podcasts where you can see all the backlinks and actually read all these articles yourself. But I included a bunch from just this last week that show multiple opposing views on cannabis. So some of them say that cannabis is increasing schizophrenia and increasing cannabis use disorder and dangerous for children. Other studies have shown that it is helpful for children with cancer, that it is decreasing schizophrenia and anxiety and paranoia in certain patients, that just a lot of different things. And this is all the time that you'll find, as soon as there's a lot of discussions in the media about cannabis, you will find multiple studies come out that are completely oppositional. They'll come out from different organizations. Sometimes even the same organizations will have oppositional studies come out on cannabis. One will say, you know, it's safer than tobacco smoke. The other one will say, it's deadlier than you thought. And both of them will have their own data sets to support their arguments, and both of them will be published in different journals. And this is kind of the main point that I will be ending on, which is, unfortunately, what we're seeing with cannabis today is it's falling into the same traps we've seen with every other pharmaceutical company, which is that, unfortunately, the vast majority of the medical journals that publish different information on drug development tend to be owned or at least heavily invested in from pharmaceutical companies who are themselves developing the drugs. So it's very difficult to suss out which information is correct and which information is heavily biased by some sort of financial interest that's backing something that they want to either be put forward or to be rejected. So this is even confusing for pharmaceuticals, because obviously there's rival pharmaceutical companies. So even sometimes within the same journals, you'll see oppositional studies for pharmaceutical products, where one will say, this product's a miracle drug, and then the other study will say, this product's gonna kill you. One is funded by pharmaceutical company A, who is developing that drug. Another is funded by pharmaceutical company B, which is developing a rival drug. And now we see the same thing starting to happen with cannabis. Again, I mentioned the Journal of Endocannabinoid Studies. This is becoming a problem, that as we see cannabis continue to grow as an industry, as we see more interest from the pharmaceutical sector jump into the cannabis industry, we also start to see the same insanity that has already plagued the pharmaceutical industry and is actually the main reason why most people go to cannabis. Most of the reasons that I've witnessed personally when it comes to why I support cannabis and why I endorse it as a medical product is because I've met hundreds of people and heard thousands of stories of people who have been on traditional pharmaceutical products for decades. Their pharmaceutical prescriptions just kept going up in volume and number of prescriptions they had, and eventually they moved to cannabis and they were able to limit or vastly decrease or completely decrease all of the prescriptions they were on, especially when it comes to pain management, anxiety, depression, PTSD. There's a lot of different things. Well, cancer patients who are obviously dealing with their own issues, cannabis tends to reduce the amount of medications that they're on. I've talked about this in a bunch of different podcasts in the past, so again, I highly recommend going through the back catalog if this is the first time listening. There's a bunch of cool interviews, a bunch of different discussions that do a good job of explaining what kind of nonsense goes on within the cannabis and the medical space. But it is starting to become difficult to figure out which studies you should trust even about cannabis, just like with most pharmaceutical drugs. I also included some links to oppositional studies when it comes to SSRIs. Some say it's the safest drug. Some say it's super dangerous and no one should be taking it. Some say people don't understand why they're taking it. Some say that there's alternatives. Some say that it's just a neutral drug. And all of those studies, if you actually read into them, a lot of them do have good data sets and they do actually have very convincing arguments. So that becomes a problem of which of these do I agree with. Obviously, I don't need to get into other things that have already happened in our recent history that are much more controversial and people have already gone crazy about, as far as medicines that go into the public and then find out, oh, there's a lot of skepticism about, is this medicine effective? Is it actually going to do what we say it's going to do? And the problem is that with every medicine, whether it's cannabis, whether it's a pharmaceutical, anything on the market is there's not one company just producing it all. It's not actually just, we're doing it for the good of everybody, to heal the planet, to heal people, to make everyone happy and safe. Unfortunately, there's brands involved. You know, you can't even trust running shoes these days, because one shoe company could be making a cheaper, sketchier shoe to beat out the other shoe company, and one of them could mess up your feet. And you think, well, I'm buying shoes. Why would it mess up my feet? They're designed for feet. How could you screw this up? They still do, because competition creates these problems. And the same thing is starting to happen within the cannabis industry, that now more and more it's becoming harder to figure out which of these cannabis companies is actually producing quality product. Because again, they all say we're producing premium bud, we're producing premium quality. Everybody can't be producing the highest quality. If that was the case, that'd be an awesome win for everybody. It'd be a great scenario for the world if every pharmaceutical company was competing to be the best and actually just producing the best products. And the problem was, not which one of these is potentially going to kill me or cause rectal bleeding or give me suicidal thoughts. Instead, it was which one of these is going to cure me faster. That'd be the best option out there. If that was the case, we wouldn't have all the problems we've had with opiates. We wouldn't have all the problems we've had with, unsure deaths that have happened all over the globe over the last decades for a bunch of different products that are on the market. We wouldn't have all the skepticism about these different products. People would be like, this one works in 5 minutes. Well, this one works in 3 minutes. This one works instantly. That would be an awesome scenario. But unfortunately, most of these companies, because of how investments work, because of how quarterly revenue structures work, and because you have to constantly make more money, most of them tend to cut corners and are looking for ways to save cost, not to save lives necessarily all the time. So with cannabis, I highly recommend doing lots of research and being very skeptical of any studies, whether they are negative or positive for cannabis research these days, just because now that there's the financial incentive behind it, and as this industry continues to grow, and as we do see possible regulatory changes, if this does get descheduled or if it becomes federally legalized, a huge amount of institutional money will be able to jump into the cannabis space overnight. Some of those will be companies like Coca-Cola or Budweiser, or things that you wouldn't have expected to jump into the cannabis industry. Other companies will be potentially companies like Pfizer and Moderna. Why wouldn't they do this? If they can make a synthetic CBD product or a synthetic THC product, and I do not recommend any synthetic cannabinoids at all. Every bit of research that's come about then has been a horror story. This is where all of the most negative press about cannabis comes from, is synthetic cannabinoids. They seem like a nightmare. Seems like we don't understand that science. It seems like we haven't been able to make any product that doesn't make people sick or deliver negative results or no results. That's kind of the best case scenario with synthetic cannabinoids, is you just get nothing. Worst case scenario is not good stuff. So I wouldn't recommend it. Most people in the industry do not recommend synthetic cannabinoids. There's obviously lots of industry reports that say, yeah, synthetic cannabinoids are going to turn into $40 billion or $50 billion in the next 10 years. Seems like it's a nightmare side of the industry. Seems like that plant just does the work on its own. Similar with psilocybin, similar with lots of these different compounds. Plant medicine is just plant medicine. If we just let these plants do their job, they actually deliver pretty great results. And that's been shown in many studies. Which studies? And this is the problem. So there's going to be studies that say synthetic cannabinoids are much better than the natural process, even though that makes no sense. And most people who actually know anything about cannabis would absolutely disagree. There are going to be those studies. There is going to be that information that comes out. So as I see this on a weekly basis now, that there is studies that contradict each other constantly coming out from different sources and sometimes the same source, which seems impossible. I would have a lot more skepticism about which cannabis products you're looking into, whether it's investing or personal use or medicinal use. So make sure you're doing lots of research from lots of different areas, and really making sure that there is, I would look at anecdotal evidence a lot now. Look at product testimonial from people who have used those products. Are they saying this is actually good? Did this person actually get better? Are they actually off all those pharmaceutical medications when they switch to cannabis? Or is that just something they're telling people? And really be diligent with how you're studying these products, because unfortunately now it's becoming as murky of water as every other medical product that's out there. We all want to believe that everybody's just doing things for the best intentions and trying to heal people, but unfortunately the vast majority of the time there's suspect things going on just because of financial incentives. And that doesn't mean that people are evil or conspiratorial or trying to kill everybody. It just means that unfortunately When there's competition that's as fierce as it is within the medical space, and there's as much money on the line as there is, definitely is within the medical space, you're going to get bad actors, and those people tend to, unfortunately, manipulate the market more than the good actors. Like in every environment, unfortunately, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and I would say you're only as good as your shittiest person a lot of the time, which sucks. It sucks to think about, but unfortunately, those people tend to influence the industry much more than the good people. The optimistic side of me wants to be like, yeah, this, the people who are doing the true work, that's what's going to save the day. But unfortunately, those people don't tend to be as financially aggressive as the people who are willing to scam you. Whether it's sneakers or pharmaceutical products or cannabis products now, be aware that there's a huge amount of misinformation and confusing information when it comes to any of the stuff going on with how effective these substances are at treating what illnesses and which products you should be buying. And just be aware that what you should be looking for is how these companies function over a long period of time. Is their, customer testimonial consistent over enough years? Has that brand actually delivered what it said? If companies are getting sued and shut down over and over again and have this lawsuit and that action and this problem, and they had to delete that product and they had to, rename that brand and they're now this company name or that, it's probably a good idea to avoid those companies' products because there's probably something sketchy going on. If someone's had a really consistent brand over a really long time, everyone says they're great, I trust them, they actually do the stuff, those are probably the people you should be looking at. That's all for today's podcast. Again, I highly recommend checking out the article. Check out investorideas.com or podcast.ca to find out for more information. Thank you. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. Investorideas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact investorideas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the investorideas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.